Advertising your business with GCN is simple, effective, and more affordable than you might think. Visit advertise.gcnlive.com for more info. Take your business to the next level.
You can stick it to the man and big tech. Join our FTL social mastodon at social.freetalklive.com.
Declare your independence on the Free Talk Live Network.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
No fear here. I declare your independence of me, Ernest Hancock. Roger Ver. Bitcoin.com. And his new one is Hijacking Bitcoin.com, the book. We're ready to be the movie. Oh, yeah, that's another thing. I didn't even think of that. Is that, Roger, is that something that would get marketed to make the movie? Is that a thing?
It could be possible, and stranger or less strange tales have been told, so this certainly could make a good movie with all the crazy things that happened.
Definitely, you know, at least a documentary. You know, Roger Ver, he started off, when I had first heard about him, it was on Free Talk Live, and, you know, Ian Freeman, Mark Edge out of the Free State Project in New Hampshire had a show, and they were, and we still broadcast on their network, and they were pimping this new thing called Bitcoin. It's about 2009, I think it was, and you know, 9, 10, 11, you got involved with it, but they really hit the libertarians hard, wanting to make sure that we all knew about it. And it was so important that to us, because we understood it was people money. You know, we'd really starting to push silver at the time. We knew that the Federal Reserve was going to go. It's 08, the Ron Paul Levolution. It's in the Fed, and we got it. Okay, so we were easy sell, and so was Roger. But he came at it from a different perspective. He had already had an online business, and what was it called? It was Memory Dealers, and then you had Agilestar, or however you call that. And what he did is he sold components, computer components and different things on there, and he took Bitcoin. He started taking Bitcoin. He's like, yeah, you know what you can buy with Bitcoin? You can buy my stuff. That way I get your Bitcoin. Thank you for playing. So this was he understood from the beginning, you know, how strong this was going to be. Now, as time went on, he started to invest. That's what they call him, Bitcoin Jesus. He was there with the money. He was an angel, man. He had the money because he understood the infrastructure needed to be done. I understood that you had to spend it. You know, I wish I had all the Bitcoin. I got $70,000 hoodies in my, you know, closet. So this is a great story, but it almost from the very beginning, when I was doing interviews and so on, from the very beginning, there were people that understood it at a philosophical level, and there were people that were just trying to shoehorn it into the legacy banking system, and whose butt they got to kiss, and how can they make it go up more and make a bunch of money. It was not a philosophical thing for them. It was just another resource to be exploited in however way they could do it, and now they turn Bitcoin into paper with ETFs like they did gold and silver. I mean, this is the way it is. So to me, I see what it's going to be. GoldmanSucks.gov coin. I already see this coming. But Roger was the one out there, and there are a couple of others, but I mean the most consistent, understood what it meant, why, to humanity, was Roger. And we'll probably talk about some of these other efforts here that helped launch it. But we're going to be talking about hijacking Bitcoin, how and when it went bad. And from my perspective, as I interviewed people, and Roger quite a bit too, there's a human element. And people wanted to control it, and I'm hoping, as Roger explains the book and his motivations for writing it and some of the highlights in it, that, you know, they're all covered. I'm sure they are. Because we don't get the book is not out until when, Roger?
It's on pre-sale right now, so you can pre-order it, but it'll actually be delivered on April 5th, so just a few days from now.
A few days from now. Okay, so let's get into it. Now, Roger, I really enjoy talking to you because I think we're kind of understand on the same wavelength here. From that perspective, I wanted to show people, so I got this page up. There's one of your sites that I think it's over on Bitcoin, featuring your pretty face on there, that you represented an encouragement for people to read about 6 books. And I was looking up there. It's Murray Rothbard, you know, it's The Law by Bastiat, it's, that kind of economics and one letter, Adelaide stuff, I mean, whatever it is, it's all the traditional ones for people to understand political philosophy, proper rule of government, and money. Why those books? Go ahead and explain that and a little bit about your philosophy going into this, and then we'll get into the book.
Yeah, those books were the things that influenced me and gave me the understanding of Bitcoin to appreciate it so early on. And if it hadn't been for reading those books, I wouldn't have appreciated Bitcoin as early on. And so, like, you have to understand money, and you have to understand how something becomes used as money to understand why Bitcoin was going to be used as money. And that's why Satoshi intended it for it to be used as money right from day one. And so it's really interesting. Like, you always hear, like, the people that are actually up to no good accusing the good guys of doing the exact same thing that the bad guys are actually doing. And so we're hearing people say, oh, I was the one who tried to hijack Bitcoin. Well, no. We put all the details right there in the book of exactly who tried to hijack Bitcoin and how they did it, and citations, you know, for every step of the way. And so it's really fantastic that the truth is finally going to get out there in this book. But here's some of the books that definitely had a huge, huge, huge impact on me. Of course, Frederick Bastiat's The Law, Everything by Murray Rothbard Will Change Your Life. Lysander Spooner, another, you know, just great, great, amazing figure in American history that they never teach you about in the mandatory youth propaganda camps that people commonly call government schools or public schools. And of course, you know, Henry Hazlitt's Economics in One Lesson. I'm so glad you pulled this up. This is so, you know, taking a stroll down memory lane for me here as well. This is really books that'll change your entire view of the world. And then The Singularity Is Near. Well, man, if you're following the AI stuff, like, it's hard to know how it's going to play out, but the singularity really is getting to be near at this point with the ChatGPT and everything else. So who knows what's going to happen with that, but I guarantee the AIs are going to be opening bank accounts with Bank of America. They're going to be using cryptocurrency to do whatever they're up to.
All right, man, we can go down so many tangents, but you brought up AI. You said it, okay? I've been paying attention to that quite a bit, too. The one thing that I don't think people are given a lot of attention to is the Dojo chip that Tesla's doing. They got robots on wheels, got millions of them. I mean, they're just running around all over, getting all this visual data and learning from that. But it's the hardware. It's the chip. It's the capacity. I also, just last night, I saw NVIDIA, how you say that?
NVIDIA.
Thank you.
One of the leading hardware manufacturers for all of that stuff.
Well, they have a chip on top of a chip, ganged in a chip. They did a presentation of, and we're getting into, gazillion etaflops. I mean, whatever the heck that they're doing. And it is, within just a few years, the Moore's Law thing is, you know, it doubles, what, every 8 years, something like that. And they're blazing past that. You know, you got to the point where you thought computation was not going to, you know, be a thing. It's a thing. So I am seeing AI, and they're going to have some kind of a AI currency that you have incentives that are going to be put out. And they're, once you program any kind of financial incentive, AI is going to use what? Crypto. Now, hell, they'll make their own. They'll be, you know, blip, we got our own crypto, and you won't even know they're even doing it. You know, I mean, that is a dangerous thing. And when they keep going on about existential threat AI, the one explanation that I heard that will apply here is that the reason it's so dangerous is because it can make the most persuasive argument down to every individual. It's not, you know, all black people, all gay people, all men, all women. No, it's down to the individual. What is the most persuasive argument for anything to you? And the motivation behind making that argument is who? What state? What king? What, you know, Putin, you know, Biden? I mean, you know, in the war of, I mean, it's just going to get craziness. So I remember when there was a Texas Bitcoin thing, you know, Snow had done, where they had a hacking competition at a Bitcoin conference. And the one that they were most interested in was using the power of Bitcoin, the mesh network and the nodes and all that, saying, you know, we could turn this into a prediction model for stock or artificial intelligence. Boom, they were swarming all over that. In the space, do you know anything about how Bitcoin inspired some AI, or it's got its own track?
And one of the more interesting related concepts that people were making arguments early on that Bitcoin is one of the very first artificial life forms, and Bitcoin's actually the one controlling all us people to set up the nodes and help it spread, and like it's consuming all this electricity and replicating with nodes all over the world, and like it's an interesting argument. So another fun argument that they made earlier on is that someday when humans finally come in contact with aliens, we don't have to be embarrassed about the type of money we're using anymore, because now we have Bitcoin. Whereas if you think about little round pieces of metal or pieces of paper, that is pretty embarrassing technology compared to Bitcoin. So there's a lot of different ways in which this can change the world.
When did it start going bad? You know, how early for you? For me, it was pretty early. I was asking a lot of questions, and it just came down to development team. I go, well, there's always a human element then. Then somebody's going to go to that development team, and we want to be in control of the development team. I mean, that it was pretty obvious to me from the beginning. But, you know, the slogan is, what is it? Trust in math, what is the Bitcoin?
Trust, not verify, I think is the slogan of a lot of Bitcoiners there. But it was on the radar of, you know, the powers that be right there from the earliest days. So I first heard about it on Free Talk Live, as you mentioned, thanks to Ian Freeman, who unfortunately now is in federal prison for running Bitcoin ATMs without permission from people that he's never met. So it's really a sad state of affairs. So free Ian Freeman, like that guy's a real American hero. And just like most real American heroes, they wind up going to jail at some point in their life.
And he didn't really take the plea. He's like, nope, do it. We're going all the way through. So props to Ian. Yeah, you heard about it. And what sparked it? What was it was said? Was it a series of shows immediately? Start there. Tell us what enraptured you with this. I mean, what was it?
So Ian Freeman mentioned it in reference to the Silk Road, where people were buying and selling illegal drugs using Bitcoin. And I've never bought or sold or used any sort of illegal drugs ever in my entire life, although I think that those should be completely illegal. But it occurred to me, like, what the heck kind of money are people using for this, right? You can't do that with PayPal. You can't do that with your bank account. What are they using for this? So I started looking into Bitcoin. And then I realized, oh, my goodness, this is going to change absolutely everything. Because I've been running an e-commerce website for, I don't know, like a decade or so at that point. And every single day, people with stolen credit cards were trying to buy things from my website. And it was a really big headache to figure out which orders were real and which ones weren't. But with Bitcoin, there were no chargebacks. I could accept payments from anyone anywhere in the world instantly, and there was no risk, right? So this is a merchant's dream come true, and it was a dream come true for people internationally that wanted to buy things from other people too, because like it made it so much easier than a credit card or a wire transfer to get involved. But that was in 2010 I heard of it, and then it was in late 2010 or early 2011 the CIA was already interested in this, and they called the lead developer at the time, Gavin Andreessen, who's the one who told Mark and Ian Freeman over at Free Talk Live about Bitcoin. But they called him in to give a presentation to the CIA about Bitcoin and how it worked and this and that. And You know, who knows? The CIA is pretty sneaky. Maybe they invited him to give a presentation just to figure out what the general public had already figured out about Bitcoin, and maybe to hide their tracks that they were already involved in doing stuff with it. Who knows? But then in 2011, June, when Bitcoin reached $30 for the first time ever, and it did it very quickly from, you know, $2 or $3 to $30 in like 2 weeks. And for the first time ever, Bitcoin got some worldwide media attention. It was in, you know, news articles around the world and started to get some attention for the first time. And way back in June of 2011, the main discussion forums where people were talking about it became overrun by bots that intentionally shut down the discussion that people were trying to have about Bitcoin. So the first time in the world Bitcoin ever got any attention, it was already on the radar of somebody that didn't want people to be able to talk about it and didn't want people to be able to hear about it. And they literally just flooded the forum with spam so that when lots of new people were interested in Bitcoin for the first time, they couldn't get any information about it. All they could get was spam. So that just shows how early the disruption of Bitcoin was already being perpetrated by these people.
Well, you think these people had something to do with its creation? Let's talk about that a little bit. You know, we were never, Satoshi Nakamoto, we know him, we don't know him, we'd have to, and I don't think any of us really cared. That wasn't the point, you know. What was your thought on that? Did you care who did it, or did you suspect that it might have been a state action, or they, them, those, or something? What do you think?
Yeah, I didn't really care much at all. Like, I guess I'm appreciative to Steve Jobs for making an iPhone at some point, but I doubt he had very much of anything to do with the creation of this one. And he's been gone for a while. And I'm glad I get to use it. I'm thankful, you know, the invisible hand of the market, all these people collaborate together to build these amazing things. But, you know, anything from a cell phone to, you know, so the vitamins on my desk and whatever else, like, people don't put much time or thought into it. They just take it for granted. And Bitcoin's kind of the same way. It just worked for people early on and solved a problem. So people just naturally wanted to start using it. And it didn't matter who the creator was. People just wanted to use it. But I guess it does matter at this point who the disruptor was, because it intentionally was disrupted by a number of people. And we gave all the details right there in hijackingbitcoin.com. It'll really make everybody's jaw drop that reads this when they realize, wow, this happened to Bitcoin. This went on. This amazing tool for the world was disrupted and neutered. And you know, basically they had this amazing tool stripped away from the world and turned into something not nearly as useful. And it's really disappointing and sad to see that happen. But it's good that the story's being able to finally be told in full right there. And again, please, if you're not aware of this, or even if you think you're aware of it, go and buy that book at hijackingbitcoin.com. I guarantee you, you'll learn lots of new things that you weren't aware of previously. And
okay,
really make you
tease these guys. Get it, because there's a lot of stories. Just one, that tell them the DeCastries link. You know, just give that little story right there, and you know, that'll tell you everything.
Yeah, and coincidence or not, the main people that were funding the main entity that was busy disrupting Bitcoin's usefulness for currency, and it's literally like it was, you know, the head of the Bilderberger Group, and like, I don't know, put on your conspiracy theory hat. Like, there's plenty of, you know, smoke going around about those guys. It's something that certainly makes you go, but even without going there, there's plenty of absolutely open, indisputable, like direct evidence. There's a man that claims to work for U.S. intelligence agency, literally was funding to make Bitcoin less useful for payments and funding propaganda to attack Bitcoin and its ability for people to be able to be used as cash around the world. So, and everything's, you know, there's citations and sources for every last little detail in the book. I think there's something like 300 citations or something, and it's a huge number there. And the powers that be are going to be really upset that this information is getting out. But that's the neat part about, you know, publishing in the internet, that sort of thing, is now it can be delayed, but eventually the truth gets out.
Right. Well, why now? You know, why not 5 years ago? Why not? You know, this book should have been written a bunch of times for a bunch of reasons. Why now?
Yeah, to be honest, it would have been out about a year earlier, but I ran into some other issues in my personal life that I had to deal with for about the last year. And it just kind of worked out well that the timing came out now with a bunch of other stuff happening, and crypto's hot on everybody's mind.
Oh, no, it's hot now, that's for sure. Yeah. You know, this is, you know, just to skip to the, I want to talk about a bunch of other things, but the DeCastries thing, when you see that they were trying to destroy Bitcoin. They wanted the transactions fees really high, and we'll talk about the fork with Bitcoin Cash, you know, after I make this statement. But the why are they doing that? Why are they keeping the memory pool down? You know, whatever we'll talk about. But it was like they intentionally wanted to kind of shoehorn Bitcoin into the legacy banking system by having off-chain different networks, and you might as well just call it Bank of America versus Chase or something. It was, you could see it happening. Then you see that, you know, core development, the people actually working on it. Then you have to have, and we'll talk about how changes are made and accepted by miners. You know, it's self-regulating. You know, every 2 weeks it resets a difficulty to make it to where the average block is 10 minutes. It was very ingenious and simple. I mean, I'm sure it's complicated, but, you know, the concept was simple that made Bitcoin work, and it do it on its own. It wasn't some central command. It was math. Well, what happened, all of a sudden you find that there is a group, and I can't remember their name, BitShares, BitSomething, BitSomebody, you know.
Blockstream,
that's right, Blockstream. So Blockstream comes in, and you scratch the paint, and you go, well, who's behind this? Some, you know, gazillionaire, the insurance firms in France, Europe, of whatever the heck, and he was chairman of two Bilderbergers. And I'm going, well, we're done, you know? So this is, when you have that kind of stuff just right there in your face, you got to go, what the? And who's the hero of this story? Roger Ver. That was coming out and go, man, they are doing it wrong and on purpose. Why? So did you ever really find out why, or you just didn't care? And then you can tell us about Bitcoin Cash.
Yeah, well, there were probably multiple players with multiple reasons, but the most simple, clear, not even hidden reason there for Blockstream to want to block the stream of Bitcoin was that they literally made the transactions of Bitcoin slow, expensive, and unreliable, and they said, oh, we have this other product called Liquid. You should use Liquid instead of Bitcoin, and if you use Liquid, your transactions will be fast, cheap, and reliable. Never mind the fact that it's centralized, and your transactions can be censored, and all the fees that you'll pay to use Liquid go to us, the Blockstream guys. Don't pay any attention to that, but look, Bitcoin doesn't work very well, so you should use Blockstream's Liquid product instead. And in fact, just kind of by chance, I don't think Adam Back, the CEO of Blockstream, knew it, but like on the day the book got released, he sent me an email maybe a few hours before the book got released saying, hey, Roger, you should come back to Bitcoin and help us promote Liquid. And it's like, you've missed the entire point of peer-to-peer electronic cash. And this guy, it'd be like somebody that went around with a you know, sledgehammer breaking people's legs and say, hey, I have a factory that sells crutches. You should buy crutches from me. And if it wasn't for me, you wouldn't be able to walk. But don't pay attention to the fact that I'm the one who broke your legs to begin with in the first place. And that's exactly what they did to Bitcoin. They broke Bitcoin's usefulness for payments. And now they're trying to sell people a product to fix the problem that they caused. And lo and behold, they earn money from every single person that uses the product that they're selling. And it's just really frustrating that more people haven't noticed that yet. But hopefully this book will point that out to a whole lot more people. And it's really time that word gets out, because most people don't realize that these people intentionally hijacked Bitcoin to break it and make it less useful and to get people to use their alternative products, in which they make money for every single person that makes a transaction on it.
These people. Describe that. These people.
Yeah, Blockstream. So there's a bunch of different people there. The CEO is a man named Adam Back. The CTO for a while was a guy named Greg Maxwell. I think he's since moved on.
Hi, I'm Dan Pilla. I started fighting the IRS over 40 years ago when they tried to seize my mother's house. I sued the IRS and won. I beat the IRS then, and I've been beating them ever since. I wrote the book on tax debt settlement, and I've helped thousands of people deal with tax problems they thought might never be solved. I can help you too. If you owe taxes you can't pay, don't wait another day. There's no such thing as a hopeless tax case. Call 800-34-NO-TAX or go to my website, danpilla.com. That's danpilla.com, danpilla.com.
What if you could cut your heating bills this winter with your existing wood-burning fireplace and not spend thousands doing it? You can with Great Wall of Fire Fireplace Grates. Our U.S.-patented, made-in-America Wall of Fire Grates increase fireplace efficiency, eliminate fireplace smoke problems, and come with a 30-day money-back guarantee. See our grates in action and get free shipping from walloffire.com or call 800-274-7364. Fireplace heat without fireplace smoke. Walloffire.com.
U.S. USA News update. Donald Trump says he can now secure a lower bond as he appeals his New York civil fraud trial, with an appeals court reducing it from $454 million to $175 million and granting him 10 days to pay.
We'll put up cash or bond very quickly, securities, cash or bond, whatever it is.
Trump alleges judicial corruption and criticizes Attorney General Letitia James, whom he refers to as a thug. The ruling prevents James from immediately collecting on the judgment. Boeing CEO David Calhoun Monday announced he would leave the company. This is the latest fallout for the plane maker amid multiple federal probes into its practices following a 737 MAX door blowout in January. Nashville police have stated there is no evidence of foul play in the death of University of Missouri student Riley Strain. Preliminary autopsy results have determined the death to be accidental. Strain's body was found in the Cumberland River Friday. John Schaefer, USA News.
All right, crew, let's get her dug.
Honey, you want to give me a hand? I'm planting that tree, remember?
No matter how large or small your digging project may be, no matter how urban or rural, you must always call 811 before any digging project. 811 is our national one-call number, alerting your local utility companies to come out and mark any lines they have near your dig site. You must call 811 at least 2 to 3 business days before any digging project, so you can avoid hitting our essential buried utilities. This includes natural gas and petroleum pipelines, electric, communication cables, and water and sewer lines. So before you do this or this, make sure you do this. For digging projects big or small, make the call to 811. Brought to you by Common Ground Alliance.
Have you ever watched a video on the internet and found yourself waiting for the skip the ad button? The reason this takes a few seconds is because the video delivery companies get to collect impression commission, and the viewer never sees the advertisement. The company still pays full price to run the ad. Does this sound like a scam to you? Is there any wonder why internet ads are so ineffective? For over 100 years, radio has been a proven source for companies' messages. Radio listeners are engaged and want to support the companies that sponsor the shows they're so passionate about. Simple companies like window treatments, security, pillow companies, and more have been able to break away from the big box stores, building multi-million dollar businesses. Find out what radio can do for your business. Call 877-996-4327 or advertise at gcnlive.com. That's advertise at gcnlive.com.
Appreciate what we do? Help us advertise, market, and promote for just $5 a month at amp.freetalklive.com.
Those that just want to be left alone, and those that just won't leave them alone. Which one are you? The Ernest Hancock Show.
Uncovering the secrets and exposing the lies. That's what readers of FreedomsPhoenix.com get every day. Readers of FreedomsPhoenix.com are constantly provided the information that detail the real news between the lines of propaganda about government policies and the true relationship we all have with coercive governments. Learn the true condition of our economy, innovations and technological breakthroughs in energy, health, computer science, and space travel. Learn the truth well before it's admitted to in the lamestream media, the media that is so last century. Corporate media has evolved into nothing more than distributors of government propaganda. But we now have a fantastic alternative. FreedomsPhoenix.com provides constant news updates on the issues that affect our lives in the most important ways. Our liberty and our property are under constant attack, and FreedomsPhoenix.com provides an understanding behind the propaganda while encouraging the participation of our readers. Join us at FreedomsPhoenix.com. That's Freedoms with an S, Phoenix.com. FreedomsPhoenix.com, where the revolution between the ears is already mature.
Welcome back, welcome back, welcome back to Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, on the Free Talk Live Network on Genesis, and our special guest, Roger Ver, HijackingBitcoin.com, new book, no one better to give all the detail of how Bitcoin, a fantastic, freedom-oriented people's money, had to be targeted by they, them, those. There was just no getting around it. Big banks, big government, big surveillance, big, had to stop it. Did they? Or have they been capable of doing that? Are there alternatives? You want to know the real story? hijackingbitcoin.com. And now, back to our conversation with Roger Ver.
That word gets out because most people don't realize that these people intentionally hijacked Bitcoin to break it and make it less useful and to get people to use their alternative products in which they make money for every single person that makes a transaction on
these people. Describe that, these people.
Yeah, Blockstream. So there's a bunch of different people there. The CEO is a man named Adam Back. The CTO for a while was a guy named Greg Maxwell. I think he's since moved on. The chief strategy officer is this really toxic individual named Samson Mao, who years and years ago, Gavin Andreessen, literally the person that told the Free Talk Live guys about Bitcoin, said, hey, this guy's toxic. Like, we shouldn't pay attention to him. And so, like, it's really interesting how many people out there are just get brainwashed, right? If you hear the wrong message often enough, loud enough, on enough platforms, you'll start to believe it. And propaganda really, really works. And that's why these people also had to engage in massive, massive censorship campaign to fool the world about what Bitcoin was supposed to be about and how it was supposed to be used and what was really happening with that. But luckily, this book is setting the record straight.
Okay. I want to, for the audience to understand the players in this, there were a lot of people, such as yourself, that understood this philosophically and how it really was going to have a big impact. And they go on to different things using different cryptos or their whatever, you know, hopefully philosophically they, you know, stay in tune. But what was the philosophy that as you do this over time, you start to gather around you friends and accomplices on doing, you know, the freeing the planet with people money and the other side, you know, define the break. What's the difference? You know, is it a character thing? Is it upbringing? Was it family, parents, incentives, threats, you know, freaking everybody anarchist libertarian were on one side and everybody else the other? I mean, you know, explain to me where you think the line is.
Yeah, and they were certainly aligned with like the, you know, libertarians and anarchists on the, you know, peer-to-peer cash side, and then the people that were more, you know, tolerant of statism on the other side. But I think one of my favorite Twitter accounts, Sal the Agorist, summed it up very, very, very well. He said, Bitcoin isn't a get-rich-quick scheme. It's a get-free-quick scheme, right? It's supposed to empower individuals all around the world. And if you succeed in that, you also get rich at the same time. It's actually both. But a big portion of the world just seems to be focused on, oh, the number goes up. Don't worry about the usefulness. Don't worry about the, you know, self-sovereign control of your Bitcoin. Just, you know, buy it and the number will go up. And, you know, never mind the fact that, you know, the main spokesperson for Bitcoin at this point is probably this guy named Michael Saylor, who's out there publicly telling people, don't replace the dollar. Don't replace the euro. Pay your taxes. Don't be mad at the government. Like, what happened to Bitcoin, right? Bitcoin was supposed to be, you know, punk rock libertarian grassroots movement of empower yourself to have complete control over your money and tell the man, hey, leave me alone. I don't need your dollars anymore. I have Bitcoin. And now it's the exact opposite where they're telling people, oh, put it in your 401k and obey everything the government tells you to do. And you're not allowed to, you know, self-custody wallets and make payments and this and that. It's really disgusting how the entire philosophy of Bitcoin has been turned upside down at this point. And the people that hijacked Bitcoin mock and attack the people that actually want Bitcoin to have the original vision that it had, which was peer-to-peer electronic cash for everybody worldwide right now with fast, cheap, reliable payments for everybody without having to use Adam Back and Blockstream's Liquid Network where they charge you a fee and they earn the fee on every transaction that you make.
You know, these names, we start slinging names around. I remember these people and different roles that they had. But you were not really a coder or programmer. You know, you weren't one of the guys back there, you know, banging on the keyboard, creating a new whatever. It was a philosophical thing with you. Who was it around you that could technically do or explain? I mean, you have Bitcoin.com. I mean, holy crap. You know, they probably offered you some money for that. But, you know, you have these people around you. Who are they? What's their level of understanding?
Yeah, some of the most technical people in the entire space were on the big block Bitcoin Cash side. In fact, 2019-ish maybe or something like that, one of the Bitcoin Cash developers literally found a bug in what's called Bitcoin today in BTC that would allow infinite inflation. And if you have infinite inflation, that's kind of the end of Bitcoin. So he literally discovered a bug that would have been the end of Bitcoin. And rather than exploiting it and using it, you know, as a weapon to you know, in the battle that, you know, for mindshare between Bitcoin Cash and Bitcoin, he told them very quietly, he said, hey, there's this bug. You guys should probably fix it. And then they fixed it. And the the really interesting part about it, too, is the same guy that introduced the bug was the same guy that was going and complaining to, I believe, the SEC, asking them to prosecute Bitcoin Cash and make Bitcoin Cash illegal. So as statist as statist can get, a guy named Matt Coelho, I think, Blue Matt is his screen name, San Francisco guy with blue hair, introduced that infinite inflation bug. And the guy that discovered the bug, he said, you know, he can't prove it, but he really, really has to wonder if it wasn't implemented intentionally, like if the bug wasn't introduced intentionally in a way to like potentially destroy all of Bitcoin. And like, that's, you know, that's a big conspiracy theory, but like, that's literally
nothing
the guy that
surprises
discovered the bug. And nothing, yeah, nothing should surprise you. And they're willing to kill people around the world with drone strikes, and they have, you know, the CIA makes all sorts of secret assassination tools. Why wouldn't they do a little bit of, you know, software sabotage to disrupt something that has the ability to disrupt the U.S. dollar as the world reserve currency? Like, it would be, you'd be stupid to think that they wouldn't try something like that. And so, like, did this guy Blue Matt actually do it on purpose? I don't know, but it certainly makes me suspicious. So
this is the incentive to control Bitcoin or destroy it, one or the other, is so high. Why?
Because it disrupts the entire power structure in the entire world, right? Like, this is literally one of the most world-changing technologies to come around in a long time.
Okay, I understand that, but you say it's world-changing. I mean, I need a word picture. I need a description, because I'm with you. I understand. You know, it is global, world, freaking universal, my God, changing something. What did it really solve?
Yeah, the reason why is that right now the U.S. dollar is the world reserve currency, right? If someone in Japan wants to do business with someone in China, they're probably going to use the dollar for the payments, right? And the U.S. dollar has been the world reserve currency for coming up on 100 years now. If that's about to change, the U.S. government's going to be terrified, because what are they going to do? How are they going to control everybody? How are they going to, like, you know, rule the entire world? How are they going to print trillions of dollars and do whatever they want with it and spend it on all these things if people aren't using dollars anymore? Bitcoin had a real shot at displacing the dollar and the euro and the yen and everything else and becoming the money for the entire world. That's much, 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 much less likely now with the way that they've managed to neuter Bitcoin. And so, of course, that's why they were busy trying to disrupt Bitcoin, because it would change the entire power structure of the entire world, and that's something that the existing power holders wouldn't want to have happen.
Early on, we had our freedom summits. We even had a Bitcoin summit. I've gone to many, you know, conferences and seminars and events and so on, and talked to a lot of people. It was obvious to me that there were a lot of group people that wanted to promote Bitcoin, not for the freedom aspect, but for, we gonna make us some money, okay? Which is fine, you know, do that freedom thing and you'll make all the money you want. But their focus was to get it shoehorned into the legacy banking system, and then here come the ETFs. This ETF stock market future trade kind of, give your opinion on that, of what that does. Beneficial, not, you know, ignored, don't ignore. I want to know what your thought process is on them putting Bitcoin on an ETF.
And we've seen them already manipulate the price of gold and silver with these ETFs, right? Where, like, who knows if there's, you know, how much gold is actually backing up the paper gold or the paper silver. They're going to do the exact same thing with cryptocurrencies, right? They're going to have fractional reserve Bitcoining, just like they have fractional reserve everything else already. And so, like, that's what's so frustrating. And one of the beautiful parts about Bitcoin and today Bitcoin Cash is that people can hold the funds themselves. If you can hold the funds yourself, you're at far less, you know, susceptible to the manipulation. You're still somewhat, you know, vulnerable, but at least you have the money yourself, and you're not going to wind up being, you know, holding nothing at the end of the day. And they've really done it a good job in a bad way of making Bitcoin not easy for people to custody themselves and be in control of their money themselves. And so, like, really, really frustrating to see it happen with, you know, gold and silver in the past. And, you know, now they're doing the same game with Bitcoin and cryptocurrencies as well.
You saw this coming early on. You could see, and I remember you describing the problems. Why are they doing this? This is not going, you're not going to have it to where it's going to be capable of rivaling credit cards. You can't do enough transactions per second. You have, it was on purpose. They wanted to raise the transaction fees. Oh, you want that payment to go through? Yeah, pay a little extra something, something to the home team here, and then maybe maybe we'll, you know, put you in line, or you have to wait forever, or there are as much as $60 transaction fees. I paid $36 one time because I had a paper wallet that, you know, I used as a demonstration on the show, and I just had it sitting by my studio desk, you know, in my home years ago, and I just wave it around, and this does this, and this is how it works, and do. My son was over on Christmas Day, and he wanted to take my, you know, I had an offline machine that I'd print out, an offline printer, you got to get all geeky about it, you know, to make cash wallets, you know, paper wallets. Well, he was doing that for all the cousins, all his nieces and nephews and kids, and he gave out, you know, some Bitcoin to everybody, and he did it like, I forgot about that. I got to check, make sure those kids got those. There's always, you get those calls. Is there a Bitcoin customer service? I lost my whatever, you know. So what happened was, he was sitting there making them, and he saw that over there, and he took his phone, and he went, security violation, bloop, and he scanned the private key, and he took it. And I'm going, you son of a... But it was like $45 on it, because it was like a dollar, you know, long time before that. And it had a $36, I wrote on it, a $36 transaction fee. You got like $4 or $5. And I go, well, if that isn't a NIA, so I use it as an example for that. The transaction fees got so high, it was unusable. When I have some guests on, you know, one you know, and he go, well, what do you want, Ernie, bubblegum money? Yes, I do. That's exactly what we were promised, that, you know, it costs like nothing, fraction of a penny. Whatever. I can't believe how many Bitcoin I was just giving away all the time. But the thing was, is that feature started to go away. And when it did, it was intentional. You were there. You were hammering. I want to talk about that time period when you were making it clear what was going to happen, and it happening, and then the fork of Bitcoin Cash. Bring us back to that time, and before you actually did it, you were there. You were trying to work with them. You were trying to stay in Bitcoin. You were trying to make sure they made good decisions. They wouldn't. You took Bitcoin and fulfilled the promise, because Bitcoin Cash works. It freaking works. When everything else is like $1 gazillion and they're doing, yeah, whatever. I took all my Bitcoin but one Cassatius coin I got for, you know, it's going to buy me, you know, a backhoe here directly. Is what's going to happen. But, you know, what I'm looking at is the usefulness of it. And it became unusable for what I wanted to do. So I took all that, goes into Bitcoin Cash, which goes up and down and up and down, does its own thing. The future of Bitcoin Cash, because it's Bitcoin, it is Bitcoin, that works. So I'm telling you, you got a Bitcoin that works, that will rise up. So bring us back to that time when you made that decision to support the fork and what led up to that, and monologue me, man. I want to hear the whole story.
Yeah, a lot of places on the internet say that I created Bitcoin Cash, but the fact of the matter is I had nothing to do with the creation of Bitcoin Cash. I was still busy on what's called Bitcoin today, and it was supposed to scale. And they were making promises about this and promises about that. And one of the, you know, and a string of broken promises, but the final broken promise that broke the, you know, the camel's back of me wanting to be involved in Bitcoin was this thing called SegWit2x, where they're supposed to implement segregated witness, this technical thing called segregated witness on Bitcoin, and it doubled the base block size from 1 megabyte to 2 megabytes, which would, both those things together would more than double the capacity of Bitcoin and buy us, you know, maybe another couple of years of adoption, and then you can figure out what to do there, whether or not they got the Lightning Network working or something else that buy us more time. Anyhow, somehow they decided that they would do the segregated witness part first, and then when it came time to, you know, keep the other half of the bargain, which was the 2 megabyte block size increase, they were nagged, and they canceled the whole thing. And Bitcoin Cash had already been around for months at that point, maybe, I don't know, 6 months or something. And that was the point where I said, okay, Bitcoin doesn't have a chance of being money for the world at this point. If they're limiting the block size to 1 megabyte, that's retarded, right? Like I was old enough already at that point. I'm even older now. Like computers are getting better and faster and cheaper, and the internet's getting better and faster and cheaper. And that's literally what I was doing before Bitcoin. Is I was selling the hardware that enabled, you know, all your home internet connections and everything else there. And so I watched the bandwidth speeds just get faster and faster and faster and cheaper and cheaper and cheaper. So anyhow, when they broke that promise, I looked around at all the other coins out there and thought, okay, which one of these has the best chance of becoming the peer-to-peer electronic cash for the world that can empower individuals to have control over their own money? And there were a number of contenders out there. There was Ethereum was, you know, getting started. Monero was already out there. Bitcoin Cash was already out there. And I looked at all of them and I decided, okay, Bitcoin Cash is probably the one that has the best shot at doing that. And I already own Bitcoin.com as well. So I felt like that was a really good match as well. And so I started focusing on Bitcoin Cash. And today, you know, it's one of the top cryptocurrencies in the world. It just plain works. And if we can go back to that example with the paper wallets you had, you said there's, let's say there was $50 on the one and your nephew or whoever scanned it and took it off and it was a $36 fee. So that means there was $14 left that he claimed if there was $50. But that $14 that he received would then cost another $36 to spend. So the $14 he received isn't even worth anything at that point.
Right.
And it was $50 was the average transaction fee at the end of 2017. That was the average fee. If you're running any sort of business where you're receiving multiple payments from customers, per incoming payment, it's going to cost you $50 to go out. So if you got 20 payments from, you know, 20 different customers, it's going to cost more than $1,000 to send that money back out. And so myself running a business, more times than I can count, I had to spend over $1,000 for a single transaction fee. And that was it. I'd had it with Bitcoin. I was done at that point. I looked for a cryptocurrency that would actually work, and I didn't need a custodian and didn't need permission from somebody and wouldn't cost, you know, $50 or $1,000 one day to use and then, you know, cost something less the next day. But the part that really pushed my buttons and the world still doesn't seem to have realized is that the software engineers that hijacked the Bitcoin product, they openly say, if you listen to what they're saying, they want the transactions on Bitcoin to be slow, they want the transactions to be expensive, and they want the transactions to be unreliable. And like, most people still don't realize that to this very day. Like, they openly say, if you listen to what they're saying, they want the transactions to be slow, expensive, and unreliable. Well, I have news for you. If something's slow, expensive, and unreliable, people are going to look for something else. They're going to use something else. If your car is slow, expensive, and unreliable, you're going to look for a fast, reliable, inexpensive car, right? And the same is true with whatever currency you're using. And that's why so many other cryptocurrencies have gotten so much popularity. And Bitcoin, BTC, is still like the, you know, market cap leader, not because of merit, just because of incumbency, because it was first and it has the name and kept the name during the, you know, the block size wars that went on. That's the only reason it's still in first place. It's not because of any, you know, merit or technological marvel. It's just because it was the incumbent, and the incumbent, you know, winds up kind of sticking. It's just like everybody, everybody hates Congress in general, but for the most part, they seem to like their local congressman, and that's why the local Congress is getting reelected. Same thing with Bitcoin there, right? Okay, like, and that's why it's still there.
I want to focus on, you know, the why the transactions were expensive. It is one of the things in there in Satoshi's white paper. It's like, I don't know, 9 pages. It's not very long. And in there, I don't think he limited it to the memory pool of the transactions to be 1 megabyte. Was that in the paper? Did he say it had to be?
Satoshi literally wrote the software code to increase the block size. And in the original version of Bitcoin, there was no block size limit. And they decided to put it in a little bit later just as a way to prevent people from doing a spam attack on the network. And the idea and the thought was always from day one to remove that limit whenever the amount of people trying to use Bitcoin got anywhere even remotely close to hitting that limit. So like anybody that tells you otherwise is lying today. And we have all the citations right there in the book that, again, is available at hijackingbitcoin.com. I keep plugging that because it'll really change a lot of people's eyes.
The we'll pimp it some more. There we go. Okay, now one of the things that I want to have a lot of newbies, a lot of people, they don't understand what we're talking about. When you have all these like, you know, Visa, you know, they got gazillions of transactions, and they've kind of got it spread out amongst whatever banks and protocol, how they do it, you know. Well, Bitcoin, because there is no bank branches or anything, there's no central command, there's no control, it just works. Well, it's supposed to. Well, the one memory One megabyte of memory storage means what? Well, it's how many transactions they can put in. And correct me when I'm wrong here. I'm going to try and simplify this. I've had it explained to me several times. But what happens, you have all these transactions go into a pool. A memory, then they hash that. It's called a Merkle root, I think. They hash all those transactions, and that hash that you get represents all those transactions underneath. And for some reason, you can put a gazillion transactions in there, but not two gazillion, okay? You know, you have a limited amount that you can put in. Well, once it goes over that those transactions, and Bitcoin is made to where a block in the chain of blocks that have all those transactions in it, you win, you get a Bitcoin reward for doing it, which is changing, and we'll talk about that. But you get a reward plus the transaction fees. Say they want these fees to be high, you know, for the transaction. Well, if you're I want this, and I was promised in 10-minute block of whatever, I want to buy this here car or whatever it is. Well, I'm sorry, your transaction fee wasn't enough to get in front of the line, and we filled up, so you go to the next one, and the next one, and the next one. Well, then, well, okay, damn it, I'll pay you $60 and get to the front of the line. That's why the transaction fees go up, is it's a diminished supply of transactions that can be done. So if you really want it, it goes up. Or you let it sit there for a week, and maybe sometime at 2 in the morning Philippine time or whatever, it might just go through. So this is what they were talking about. If they increase that memory pool size of all the transactions to double or three times, or, and you know, Roger, you know, mentioned this, technology was getting super fast. Memory was not nothing. I mean, this is that we're way past when Bitcoin first came out, way past. But they wanted to keep the transaction number limited per block so they could manipulate you. So they could get you to pay more, so they could kill it, so they could something. So when Bitcoin Cash goes, well, we'll just increase, you know, the memory size for the transactions. Boom, now it works. Peace out. No, you can't do it. How far off am I? Am I close?
Yeah, very, very close. And so, like, just super, super rough numbers to make it easy to understand over the radio here. The block size on Bitcoin was limited to 1 megabyte by these people. Inside of 1 megabyte, you can fit, let's call it 1,000 transactions to make easy math. It's actually a little bit more than that. But all you have to do to increase the block size from 1 megabyte to 2 megabyte, instead of 1,000 transactions per block, you can now fit 2,000 transactions per block, twice as many. And like one single photo on my iPhone nowadays is like, you know, 7 or 8 megabytes. So to try and limit that to 1 megabyte every 10 minutes is just absolutely insane. And it's only going to get more insane as the years go by and computers get faster and cheaper and better. And that's why more and more people are using things other than Bitcoin for payments. So I see the statistics for some of these online cryptocurrency payment processors. The amount of people that are using Bitcoin for payments online is becoming a smaller and smaller percentage of overall cryptocurrencies, because now I think I just saw a press release, BitPay, I think they added another like 160 additional cryptocurrencies you can pay with now.
Ah, I feel good.
It's easy to see. We're being conned by the institutions we used to trust. The mainstream media is distracting us with meaningless headlines instead of focusing on the harsh realities facing American families. We all know something big is coming, and that's why so many folks are preparing. They're becoming more self-reliant by investing in emergency food storage from My Patriot Supply. My Patriot Supply is the nation's largest emergency preparedness company, and they make it easy for you to prepare. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com and secure some emergency food kits. There's a dozen to choose from that contain tasty breakfasts, lunches, and dinners, averaging 2,000 calories per day. Get at least one food kit for each family member. My Patriot Supply also sells large solar generators, gravity-powered water filtration systems, heirloom seeds for your garden, and survival gear. Order by 3 p.m. and your items will ship that same day. Time is short. Prepare today. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com. MyPatriotSupply.com.
Tahibo Tea Club's original Pure Pouty Arco Super Tea comes from the only tree in the world that fungus does not grow on. As a result, it naturally has antifungal, anti-infection, antiviral, antibacterial, anti-inflammation, and anti-parasite properties. So the tea is great for healthy people because it helps build the immune system, and it can truly be miraculous for someone fighting a potentially life-threatening disease due to an infection, diabetes, or cancer. The tea is also organic and naturally caffeine-free. A one-pound package of tea is $49.95, which includes shipping. To order, please visit shopsupertea.com. The first word is shop, spelled S-H-O-P, then the word super, and then the word tea. The complete website is shopsupertea.com or call us at 818-984-6100 Monday through Saturday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. California time. That's 818-984-6100. Shopsupertea.com.